You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and with me here today is a very special guest. We have comedian Reza Asghari. Reza, go ahead and say hello.
Hey, what's going on, man? A pleasure to be short boxing with you, finally.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming in. Reza's a great guy that I ran into at a comic book shop a while back, and we became good friends, and I'm glad to have you on, finally. Yes, absolutely. We're going to have a good time.
I love listening to you guys, so it's nice to be a part of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. I really appreciate it. And tonight's special is something that I kind of came up with a general idea, and then you took that ball and you ran with it, and you ran so far that we had to change the title because this is some deep mining. This is what we are going to call holiday oddities, and that will be
the proper name.
Yeah, films, television, and movie-wise that are holiday-related that you might not have heard of that are just simply bizarre, heartwarming, and flat-out weird as hell. So with that, I think we have numero uno on the list, Reza, that you were chomping at the bit to get at. And what one is that?
Well, indeed, the first one we have to start out of the gate with is the Star Wars Christmas special, because I feel that's the most familiar to people. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. And it was one of those things that George Lucas tried to hide and just couldn't because the internet.
Yeah, that's true. Somebody came out and they broke out with a copy of it, and it was all over from there. They had VHS technology back then. People recorded it, and unfortunately, it made its way out.
Yep. And it's one of those things that should be a part of Star Wars canon, because it's got some cool stuff in there. Like, at one point, for no reason, in the middle of it, it switches to a cartoon and tells you, like, the origin story of Boba Fett. Like, cool, but what?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually his first appearance, if I recall, as well. Like, the first time, besides some random parade that he appeared in costume, which was his absolute first appearance ever, this is his first on-screen appearance in this animated little short that's inside this Star Wars holiday special.
It is. It's the first time you get to see him, and it just kind of comes and goes with no explanation, like the entire thing.
Yeah,
the general plot is essentially they're trying to get Chewbacca home to celebrate Life Day, which they never explain what it is. Like, they never tell you what Life Day is.
Right.
And one of my
favorite... We're left to guess if it has to do with the tree or not, but I assume it does. But
yeah. Nobody's sure. I we assume, obviously, because they give out presents, it's something to do with Christmas or Christmas-related. But the presents are one of my favorite things of the entire film.
Oh, do tell.
The first one that I remember seeing was Chewbacca gives his dad this, like, virtual helmet as a gift, and Chewbacca's dad puts it on. And it becomes like this virtual disco with, if it might have been Donna Summer or someone else. And she starts doing an entire song, and they play the whole song from beginning to end with her performing it. And you slowly realize that this is a sex helmet. Chewbacca's dad is totally getting off to this thing. And it's so uncomfortable, but you can't turn away.
Yeah, it actually is really, really bizarre. I don't know why everybody was smiling so much. Even in the script, if you read the original script, it says that he is given something that is to be assumed to be X-rated.
Yeah.
So exactly. The intention is absolutely there. It's not even a mistake. It's like, oh, okay, cool.
It was purposeful.
Yeah, very purposeful. Very awkward when she was talking and stuff about... you know, oh, do you like me? I like you. You know, stuff like that. I was like, oh my God.
It's like they got all of the dialogue for the female out of like 80s commercials for phone sex hotlines.
Yeah.
And it's just like, hey, do you want to come over to my house? My parents are asleep. Like, whoa, settle down.
Yeah, like, maybe no. maybe not. I don't know. Could be getting awkward.
Hey, do you have a six pack of PBR and an ID that says you're overage? What? What's happening right now?
The special, all about this. I mean, it did have a whole cast, like a huge cast. It started out with Harrison Ford and Peter Mayhew, aka Chewbacca, on the Millennium Falcon as they were making their way to Chewbacca's planet for Life Day.
Yep.
And Mark Hamill appears in it, of course, as Luke. Oddly, he looks really over makeuped and out of place. Okay. Carrie Fisher on drugs, probably. I mean, we assume. Seems spaced out, even for a space type story. At one point, she sings, so that's a special treat.
Yeah, absolutely.
We get, of course, Anthony Daniels as C-3PO. We get James Earl Jones as the voice of Darth Vader. Bea Arthur's playing Akmina. Do you remember Bea Arthur in this?
I do. Bea Arthur was the most amazing space bartender of all time.
Yes, she was. I think a lot of people have a very special place in their heart for Bea Arthur just simply because she did do this little short section of this film justice. She actually did a really good job. People seem to really like it. They liked the song that she sang. They were saddened by the fact that she was having to close her bar.
Her scene was very heartfelt, and it was very genuine and touching.
Right. And speaking of touching, Harvey Korman's character in that, playing that perverted guy that came into the bar and kept hitting on her and trying to get her to go out with him, was extremely awkward, but she played it off with such grace and elegance, so to speak, as anybody that's ever worked in a bar before and has been hit on, ladies, I know you know what I'm talking about. This is cringeworthy to see Harvey Korman get turned down over and over and over, but continue to try.
Yes. And also I know what that's like because I've, you know, lived in different places and I've been around the gay community and gone to gay bars and been hit on frequently because I'm a catch.
You're a real peach.
But yeah, I would thank you for bringing that up though, because actually that was the next thing I was going to mention, that Harvey Korman is another, like, one of my favorite parts of the whole special, because he seems to play like 9 different characters. He's everywhere in that thing.
Yeah, they put him in, I think, like 3 times. He's a chef in one, like, a la Julia Child, with 4 arms, and, like, he's a lady in it. It's really odd.
Yeah.
He's a Morphian instructor, so he's, like, a robotic instructor that, like, keeps breaking down mid-instruction. And then he plays that creepy dude, Krellman, who, by the way, drinks out of a hole in the top of his head that never closes.
Yeah. There's certain things that I just kind of blocked out like that where I'm like, there's no point. I'm going to cause myself an aneurysm if I try to think about this.
Yeah, like, shit, what if it rains? Does he drown?
Exactly. You know? There's more questions than answers there.
Yeah, way more. I mean, this film in general has way more questions than answers. It's really bizarre to have been created as a... It just feels like there was so much put into it, but it was so shoddily put together. I don't understand it. I don't understand. There must have been like one half of the production, like the writers and stuff. And like they were really careful and they really wanted to plot this out. And then the other half was like, fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. One half of the room was very focused and the other half just smoking weed and just like, let's finish this shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah, my third and last favorite, absolute favorite thing of it was when Chewbacca gives his son his present and he hands him the box and the son opens the box and you get exactly what you want, which is Jefferson's starship just rocking out for like 12 minutes straight.
That's right. And it's like a terrible song, too.
A horrible song, but they are just going to town and Chewbacca's getting loving it.
Of course. So many advertisements for things and people and stuff. It's really just a super bizarre thing to behold. If somebody hasn't seen it, highly recommend you try to watch it or at least check out some of the clips on YouTube because it's phenomenal. It's a special treat for sure.
And why it holds a special place in my heart is because it showed up 6 months after I did. It came out the same year that Reza did.
Really? Came out in, what was it, 78, I believe?
78, yes.
Yeah. It preceded me by a little bit, by like a year. So, you know, but I allow it.
Oh, you youngins.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so young. Well, I think we should probably move on to the next one. We're never going to get to any of these other ones. What do you have next on your list?
Well, I'll go to one that's a little bit more bizarre that probably people aren't familiar with. From 1964, we have The Magic Christmas Tree.
Now, that one's about a boy that climbs a tree to save a witch's cat and finds himself thrust into a fantasy adventure to save Santa. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. And he agrees to help her after she tells him that her cat's name is Lucifer. I'm like, there's a red flag right out of the gate.
Yeah, well, you know, witches probably would have cats named Lucifer or Satan or the devil or Beelzebub or whatever. Yeah, that makes sense. Total.
You would assume. But yeah, so like she ends up giving him a magic ring and tells the kid that if he plants some seeds, that a magic tree is going to grow. So he pretty much does that because, you know, you do what a witch tells you.
Yeah.
And then Thanksgiving comes around, so he performs a spell and the tree starts growing overnight, and his dad tries cutting it down, but he can't because it's a magic tree.
Of course it is.
So, yeah, like, eventually, you know, the usual story, the tree comes to life, gives him a bunch of wishes, and the kid, the best part about it is, you're like, this is a nice Christmas tale. He gives him wishes. He's going to wish for world peace, and it's going to be a Christmas story. Absolutely not. The first thing he wishes for is a full hour of complete and utter power and control.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. That's his first wish. And he immediately starts abusing that power. Like, he starts going to town like he's Trump on the last days of his presidency.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I mean, yeah, he's abusing left and right. And then, of course, his next wish, because he's a selfish little prick, is he wants Santa Claus all to himself for no one else.
Wow. Seriously. Now to hang out with him or just like in general, like gifts and things?
He wants Santa. Like nobody else gets presents and Santa doesn't, like, no more Christmas for anyone else. It's just for Mark now.
What a little shit. He's a terrible kid.
Yeah. This kid's a little bastard. You're like, why didn't you eat him, witch? You should have ate him.
Boy, and this is probably how Treevenge came about, if you haven't heard about that film.
That one I remember slightly, but you'll have to brush me up on it.
Just killer Christmas trees. They've had enough.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that being like a sequel to this.
Yeah. Just took a while. Yeah,
thankfully, eventually, you know, he comes around because he realizes he's a prick and he's making everybody else unhappy. So his third wish is to give Santa Claus back to everybody else. But the best part about it all is that he wakes up on Christmas thinking that he restored the world back to right. Nope. Turns out it was all just a dream. None of it actually ever happened.
They went the Dallas route. It was all a dream.
They took the lazy writers out, as we all like to say.
Wow. Yeah, no thank you. Hard pass for me on that little shit.
I mean, after everything that happened with this dickhead Mark, like, the writers are just like, how do we end this? I don't fucking know. He either has to die or it was just all a dream.
Yeah,
those
they
were
don't
their only options.
We can't kill a kid. Can we kill a kid? I don't know. Can we kill a kid? I don't think we can. It's a dream.
After the first hour of that story, I think everybody should agree that Mark needs to die. That kid's a little fucker.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would have argued it, but probably the parents, maybe. I don't know. Even then, they might be like, now, children, I want you to know that this is a lesson. You need to behave or you'll die.
That could be a new thing we can start. Make that a new Christmas tradition where we get our kids to watch The Magic Christmas Tree and at the end of it go, remember that or you'll die.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good lesson for the little children to learn. What do you have next?
Well, another one of my all-time favorites that I like to watch at least like once a year is a classic Scrooge that we're all familiar with Bill Murray.
Ah, yes. Love that film. Always a great film. Always a great story. Basically, it's just the Christmas Carol retold for our times with a shittier Scrooge, I guess.
Exactly. It was basically the Christmas Carol remade to fit the late 80s. And, yep. I mean, it was perfectly done. That's the thing about it. It was absolutely perfectly done in such a great way. And it has one of my absolute all-time favorite people, Carol Kane, in it. I love everything she does.
Oh, my God. She's phenomenal in that. She's so mean and great.
Yeah, she is the best, like, fairy godmother Christmas character I can think of. Because she does all of these horrible things with such a sweet mannerism that you can't help but love her.
Yeah, she's the ghost of Christmas present, if I recall.
Yes. Yes, she is.
She just beats the hell out of Bill Murray, and it's so funny.
Yeah, because he takes all of, like, the pratfalls and stuff in such a great way. Like, the two of them work so well together in those scenes.
Yeah. Bobcat was another one. Bobcat Goldthwait. I loved him in this film.
Oh, he's another one of my personal favorites because he's also an amazing director. The films that he's directed are just so good.
Uh-huh.
And if you've ever gotten a chance to see him live do stand-up, it's one of the best things you'll ever witness. Actually, I got to do a show with him a while back when I had first started back in Atlanta. And I don't know why I thought it was a good idea. At the end of the night, I was like, we're wearing similar hats. Let's trade and take a picture. And as soon as I put it on, I'm like, there's an hour and a half of sweat in here.
Well, you know, I mean, you still have the picture, right?
I do still have the picture.
Maybe not the hat, unless you laundered it, but definitely still have the picture. That's good. That's good. So Scrooged, you know, I mean, that's something that I think a lot of people know about. But again, for those that don't, it's just an updated Christmas Carol. It's definitely worth checking out, and it is readily available on all streaming platforms. Now, these other ones that we talked about, probably more looking at like YouTube life at this point.
Yeah, pretty much you're going to have to either find them on like YouTube, Daily Motion, one of those things, or like on a torrent site somewhere if you can download it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, you had another one that I thought was a bit far out. And by far out, I mean out of space, a.k.a. outer space, a.k.a. aliens from outer space coming down to learn the true meaning of Christmas. We were talking about the 1977 short sci-fi film, A Cosmic Christmas.
Ah, yes.
It is animated also, if I did not reference that.
Yes, because this is the type of film where you can only do animated. There is no way to make this happen in live action without acid being involved.
I believe it was made by Nelvana. For those that are interested in Nelvana, they track Nelvana's history. I think it was their first production, or one of their first productions at least.
Ah, that I actually did not know.
Yeah, premiered on CBC Television. It's a Canadian film originally. Yeah.
I did know that it came from Canada, thankfully.
Eh?
But yeah, so, you know, these aliens, as you say, they come down to try to find the meaning of Christmas. So, of course, they find a kid and his goose, and the kid and the goose take the aliens to his grandmother, who teaches them the meaning of Christmas based on all of her memories about them.
Oh, that's like, sweet.
Yeah, like, this is sweet. This is nice.
And then the Nazis came. And then we had to hide in the attic with Grandma. It's like, oh, God.
About the Great Depression, where we just gave each other ourselves as presents.
Yeah, I was gifted to my brother, which was awkward.
Yeah, how do you re-gift that?
I don't know. I don't want to be involved in that one, let me tell you.
Yeah, like the aliens are touched by this. You know, it's a sweet, touching moment. The grandma's like being all sweet about Christmas and everything's going nice until the town bully steals the kid's goose.
Of course, as bullies do.
So in the attempts to rescue his goose, unfortunately, this poor kid Marvin falls through an ice lake. And goose owner, Peter, you know, trying to rescue him. He goes and they go and get the aliens. So, you know, they're like, the aliens are the only ones that can help these kids. And yeah, they promised, obviously, to not interfere with anything on Earth because, you know, aliens apparently have the same rules as time travel. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, they're like the Watcher.
Yeah, like we can watch stuff, we can't touch it, or all of a sudden it'll change the course of history.
It's like going into a strip club, you know?
Yeah. But it's like it puts them in a dilemma because they're like, do we help this kid or do we finish learning the meaning of Christmas?
Right. And by helping this kid, they do learn the true meaning of Christmas. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Yay. Because
by helping both of the kids get out of the ice, they find out that the town bully actually stole the duck or the goose, rather, not because he was a dick, but because he didn't have any food and he wanted something to eat.
But he knew it was that kid's pet, right?
He did. But, you know, when you're starving, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
There's like no other geese out there in the woods. He's got to steal. Okay. I get it. I guess.
I mean, I figured it was the closest goose and he was really hungry. I'm giving Marvin the benefit right. of the doubt.
So at the end, though, do they cook the goose for him or is he just invited back to dinner?
No, he just finds out that that's a really sad story and he invites Marvin back to dinner and the aliens come to dinner. And in the spirit of forgiveness, they all learn the true meaning of Christmas. So it ends up in actually a nice little, like, you know, ribbon.
That does. And, you know, there were some fun reviews on it saying that the poor kid was he had a rebellious nature to him. And by submitting and being submissive to the family in order to find something to eat, he gave up that that ambitious soul that he had and ruined himself forever. And I was like, wow, what a terrible review. Like, this guy, somebody hurt him. And I don't know who it was, but I feel really sorry for the guy.
You are not wrong. I can guarantee he's like a small town cop somewhere who got bullied enough to where he's like, I'm the bully now.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. That's got to be it. So we went into outer space, and once you're back from outer space, you get such a hunger that it's usually for something like ice cream. Do we have anything that has ice cream in it by chance?
Well, funny enough, you should ask, we do have something from 1972 called Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny.
Oh, shit. What is that? That sounds crazy. It really does. I don't understand. What are they doing? What are they doing with these films?
Basically, a lot of the films on my list come from like the early 60s to like the late 70s and 80s. And that's when all the drugs were being done. Just all of the drugs.
Sounds right.
So, you know, it's kind of the answer to most of this stuff. So with Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny from 1972, obviously, you know, Santa's workshop, the elves are like, what's going on? Where's Santa? And he has crash landed in Florida.
Right. And when you usually crash land in Florida, you get stuck in the sand, I'd imagine, right? That's probably where they're going.
Exactly. He's stuck in the sand. The sleigh can't move. So Santa's just kind of singing and falling asleep. And singing and falling asleep. But somehow, in the midst of singing and falling asleep, he realizes he has telepathic powers. So he starts summoning children from around the town like a weird Pied Piper.
All right. I don't know what the parents would think about that when some guy's taking his kids away.
Well, the fact that they just went and nobody came to claim them shows you all you need to know about the parents.
That's true. They're on vacation. They're like, well, less mouths to feed.
Or they're just sitting at home drinking their PBRs and waiting for the next truck rally. I don't know. That was pretty, like, specific of me.
Yeah. That's pretty specific, yeah.
But like, I actually had to write this down because I remembered it specifically, and it really made me, like, perplexed as to why it was this combination of things. Because Santa needs help getting his sleigh out of the sand, so he telepathically calls the children to have the children go and get him animals to pull the sleigh.
Right. Yeah, it was like a sheep and a pig.
Yeah, a donkey, a horse, a gorilla.
They all play together so well.
It's just like, okay, I guess you would just need the gorilla and that would be it, but I don't know. I'm not sure what the sheep is for. Maybe for the gorilla to eat to give him some more strength to help pull the sleigh?
So, something weird that I was reading about this is that there's an appearance by Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. Is that true?
Yes, indeed. There is an appearance, and that's literally all it is. They just kind of show Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn watching from afar, and then never explain it, and go back to it ever again.
Why?
I'm still trying to figure this out. It's been since 1972.
Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Literally, it's like as the kids and the animals and the gorilla are trying to help Santa, they just kind of show Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn just like, yep. Like Matthew McConaughey in a freaking Lincoln commercial. And then just cut away and like, forget that ever happened.
Boy, that's so bizarre.
Yeah. You know, like, I don't. So, you know, of course you're hooked in.
Of course. So,
like, the animals are trying to help and like, it's not working. So to encourage the animals and the children, Santa starts telling them about the story of Thumbelina. And then suddenly it just cuts away to a version of Thumbelina where some girl's going to empty now, like basically a condemned theme park called Pirate World. And they play the entire thing out.
What?
Yeah. The entire thing with full original and end credits.
Oh my god, okay. So there's a story within a story, got it.
Yes. So like after he tells them this encouraging story, Santa takes off his jacket and then goes back to sleep.
What a lazy fuck.
I know. And here's the best part, is their efforts were all for naught. Because once Santa wakes up, he just wakes up to a fucking fire engine being driven by an ice cream bunny. Which, like, apparently one of the dogs just called on because he got tired of all this shit.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And the best part is the ice cream bunny ends up driving them to Pirate World, which apparently isn't a story in Santa's tale. It's a real thing now.
Does the ice cream bunny offer to drive him home or something?
Yes, eventually the ice cream bunny does take Santa home in his weird fire engine. Takes him back to the North Pole. And that's when the children realize, oh, Santa's sleigh is still stuck in the sand.
But boy, is this bunny delicious.
And here's the best part. The kids are like, what are we supposed to do? How do we get this out of here? Suddenly the sleigh just disappears and teleports to the North Pole. Nobody knows how.
Oh, you know what? I know. So Santa was doing the right thing by constantly falling asleep, because if you just fall asleep, you can teleport wherever you want. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't realize that. I figured, yeah. You know, there was some sort of powers like 11 from Stranger Things. Like, he's got to rest. He's got to eat his Eggos and get his strength back.
No, that's just try it tonight. Try it tonight. You won't regret it. Just plan on imagining where you want to be, and you'll teleport right there.
I'm doing that, man. And if I don't wake up in the middle of Hooters in Wilmington, Nebraska, eating a delicious plate of teriyaki hot wings, I'm going to be mad at you.
Okay, go ahead. You can be mad at me. we're almost out of time, so real quick, let's go over just a couple more if we can. I have one here. It's a 1959 film. It's called Santa Claus, but it's also sometimes known as Santa Claus versus the Devil. It's a 1959 Mexican fantasy film. So tell me a little bit about that one real quick.
That one is pretty much Santa Claus in outer space doing battle with a demon named Pitch, who was sent by Lucifer to ruin Christmas by killing Santa Claus so that he can make all of the children evil.
That makes absolute sense, actually. All right.
Yes. This was done in 1959, so you can only imagine how amazing the cinematography and the special effects are.
Yeah, I saw what was called the trailer for it, which was actually just a long clip of several different scenes of like the devil this pitch character, aka the devil, sneaking into the children's house and firing up the chimney with a bunch of heat and flames. So when Santa tries to climb down, it roasts him. And yeah, it almost works, but does not. Pitch is distraught by that, so he tries a few other things, tries to lock him out of the house. It's like a Home Alone instead of Kevin McAllister, it's the devil.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Lucifer conjured up this evil demon and was like, all right, go to Santa Claus's house and put a hot iron on the door.
Yeah. It's like, okay, cool. So this one I actually do recommend if you're wanting something that's really just out there. And I'd make it a drinking game. I definitely would. Every time there's some stupid thing done, actually, now you'd die. Don't make it a drinking game. Just start it drunk and get sober near the end. You'll be all right.
I would recommend making it a reverse drinking game where you just take one drink off of your calendar for every weird thing that happens. For alcoholics, this will be a great way to sobriety.
That is a really good idea, actually. So maybe try that. I don't know, but we've got one more here that we can quickly mention. This one, I think a lot of people probably know this just specifically because they did this episode, I know for sure, on, I think it was a Mystery Science Theater 3000, and Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. It's a 1964 science fiction comedy. Very loose on the comedy, I will say.
But my favorite things, there's a lot of interesting stuff about it, too, because it's got Pia Zadora when she was 11 years old as one of the Martian children.
Odd, but okay.
It's actually, I found out this fun fact while I was reminiscing and looking this up. It was the first ever documented appearance of Mrs. Claus in a movie.
Oh, yay. Wow. Yeah. They got a first thing. That's great.
Yeah, it showed up like a month before Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
It had a budget estimated at $200,000, by the way, which definitely shows.
Yeah.
The Martians are very, very poorly done. I don't understand it, but good on
them. I mean, they were one step away from essentially being the green paper plate stapled head guys from Star Trek.
Yeah, pretty much. This film, I think you can find the Mystery Science Theater 3000 episodes, probably on YouTube as well as, some other streaming platforms, maybe, Netflix or something, Amazon Prime. This film though, I'm pretty sure you can find it for free on Tubi TV, which is a free streaming platform that you can watch. It does have commercials, but it does have a lot of movies for free and you can check it out there. Anything else you want to mention about this movie?
Just the fact that it's absolutely nuts because, you know, the whole point of them is trying to get their kids to somehow learn about the spirit of Christmas because they watch too much TV from Earth and it's always about a news show that interviews the real Santa Claus.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, essentially they just say we need a Santa Claus type of figure here, so they travel around Mars trying to find the right person and apparently run into a lot of fake Santa Clauses.
It is kind of fascinating that they said that it was too much pop culture influence that were making the Mars children lazy and they needed Santa to kind of inspire them. And
that was a little bit of like nice kind of foreshadowing.
Yeah, absolutely. It really kind of I mean, they might as well say social media, you know, pop culture, social media. It's all in the same vein. In fact, if they redid this film, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, also, if you like just silly words, you know, watch it for the names. They got alien characters called Kemar and Voldar, Stabo, Shim, Dropo.
Yeah. And Klutzo and Sneezy and Dopey. And the beat goes on. Yeah, the list goes on and on and on. Well, I think we're going to have to call it there. Reza, thank you so much for being on today. It was an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely, man. It was my pleasure to be on here with you. Your voice is just soothing.
My dulcet tones are, they're quite soothing.
Well, I like about my friend Donald, snow on the roof and fire in the oven.
Yeah, buddy. All right. Well, thank you for being a part of this. By the way, I know that you know this, but others may not, that you can find our social media on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for The Real Short Box. We are available on YouTube. We do a live podcast usually once a week on Mondays around 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. We've been doing that for a while. We will continue to be doing that for a little while longer while this pandemic stretches on and on and on. We do have plenty of podcast platforms. We're on Blueberry, Stitcher, Spreaker. We are also on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and just a host of others. You can find us on TuneIn as well. So please seek us out if you would like to. And if I don't see you out and about anytime soon, perhaps Rez and I will see you all at the comic shop. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again, Reza.
Absolutely. You got it, my friend.
Have a good night.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.